Hey, good afternoon. This is Scott Nelson. I've been told we do have a quorum at this time, so I'd like to call a meeting to order. Should we do roll?
Yes, sir. Okay. We have in the room Scott Nelson, David Reed, Mark Newman, myself, Nick Sandenstock, Paul Cuffey, Ryan Jones, Lieutenant Ben Hendricks, Pete Rogel, and Clint Rowland. On team, I have Sammy Bojan-Kako, Aaron Kalara, Henry Cole, Master Sergeant Joe Rodriguez, John Rockwell, Misty Hart, Keith Aaron, Carl Edwards, Jim Goodman, Master Sergeant Higginbotham, Bobby Carter, Fire Marshal Kyle Green, Eli Barry Garland, Mickey Flores, Zach McRae, Rick Rainbow, Scott Roberts, Paul McCorris, Stacy Day. Did I miss anybody?
Right. Scott Stormo's on too now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Scott. Do we have any special guests? Of course we do. I can see them. But would you like to introduce the special guests?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For everyone, this is Paul Fussy. So I just want to introduce the two guests that we have in the room today. It's Pete Rogel and Clint Rowland from BK Technology. So thanks for joining us in person today.
Thank you very much. Yeah. With that, we can move on to the review and approval of February's minutes. Has everyone had a chance to read those, review them? Okay. Any requested changes at this time before I call for an approval? Sounds great. Well, at this time, could I get a motion and a second to approve the meeting minutes?
John Rockwell, move to approve.
And thank you, John. And a second?
Kyle Green, second.
Thank you. Any other objections for the discussion? Okay. Hear nothing, the motion's passed. Minutes are approved. We can now move on to the issues and risks and all the good stuff there, issues and risk log. And Mr. Fussy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for everyone, Mr. Woodall is now in the room with us. So we do have one update. So Jeremy Rose, who's our representative for Motorola for the Bay, informed me that for R1 North battery plant, the batteries are here and they will be replacing the batteries tomorrow at R1 North. So that's been a long time in the making, so we're very happy with that. We are not anticipating any problems. They're going to keep it on regular shore power as they're replacing the batteries, and it should be only a day. But Claire will update as we go along. But that's the only changes I have, Mr. Chair, that hopefully R1 North battery plant will be done by tomorrow. Any questions from the group on that?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Fussy. I just want to let you know Bruce Richter has also just entered the room.
John Cronut is on the phone now as well.
Oh, okay. Yep. Hello, John.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, we can move on to how about action items?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we'll talk about here in a little bit. However, good news for everyone who has not heard or has not been made aware. We did receive FedRAMP approval after many years of work. So thank you to everyone who's working behind the scenes on that one. So when we start looking at our action items, that was a carryover to get training on APX Next radios. As of February 25th, the State Radio Shop, APFDS, they began testing on, turning on and testing the APX Next radios. And we'll be working with Motorola as Scott's team and Nick's team to set up a training session for all the agencies on FedRAMP. But that's the only update we have right now, Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you. Are there any questions concerning the action items with FedRAMP?
I've got one question.
Go ahead, sir.
I was wondering, does this mean that Smart Connect is enabled on the system now, or are we still waiting for some testing for that?
Hey, this is Nick, the system manager. So technically, yes, it's enabled in the system. We are still wanting to do some testing and playing with it. But, I mean, it, in all terms of purposes, yes, I mean, it is enabled. It can be literally utilized, I mean. But I think maybe Scott might want to add some to that, I imagine.
Well, it's was that a federal agency asking the question? I tried to see who was talking there real quick.
Yeah, this is Eli Barry Garland with Department of Interior, Bureau of Land Management.
All right. My shop supports the state radio users, obviously. So there's kind of two perspectives, I guess, how I would answer this question. But we are trying to look at learning and understanding how it works, what the pros and cons are to it, so we can advise our state customers. We can obviously share that information with you. And since you're federal, if you would, you know, like to be involved in doing some testing, I think we'd be happy to try to share that responsibility and opportunity with you. What are, you know, just find out kind of what your potential use cases are and kind of both work to figure out what the bugs are.
Yeah, that'd be great. Be happy to chat about that offline.
All right. Yeah, if you want to send me an email afterwards, we can do some more talking about that.
Okay. And are there any other questions concerning the action item? I hear none. Paul, would you like to do the operations management office updates?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Nice.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. So kind of a lengthy report today. So we'll start with our training. So Dan Nelson, he's working on the AWARN versus ALMR training video. And what we really want to do is highlight the differences between the two systems and how they work together. When you have your VHF and 7800 megahertz. So we've got a lot of questions from the field. How does that work and with the simulcast system? And obviously we work with the AWARN shop, Mark and Jason and Trig and everybody. So we're working on that little vignette, and that'll be out on the website soon, the difference between the two systems. So going for outreach. So myself, Scott Stormo, Nick Bounenstock, we met with the Mat-Su Bureau for planning. So what they're looking at is possibly moving some towers or starting to use ALMR more. So we went out there. It was a very productive meeting with their radio shop and their managers there. And we're looking at any gaps that we might be able to fill in those areas. We don't have very good ALMR coverage, but they have good coverage with their towers. So very productive meeting, and we're looking and working on scheduling another one. I follow up on that one. Also, Nick, Scott, and I, we had a meeting with the Customs and Border Patrol radio team and their Anchorage office. They're looking to add 100 radios to the system and working on their talk share agreements and code plugs for the different agencies. So it was a very productive meeting on there. There are newer members to ALMR, so we're in the process of that, getting all set up for them. As everyone knows, the legislative session is going on, and I just want to say thank you to the entities and individuals who are down in Juneau talking to different legislatures and promoting ALMR. So Chief Browning from Central Emergency Services Fire Department in Soldotna requested some ALMR coverage issues. He was contacted by Representative Ruffridge's Chief of Staff, talked to him about Nikiski, Turnagain Pass, and I sent him some talking points for the ALMR. So it was good to hear, and it's good representation and for Chief Browning out there, too, to talk to the ALMR and the legislatures on that one. So if I hear any more on that, I'll let everybody know. I attended the monthly APO meeting. That's the Alaska Police Officers Association. And then we also met with Ryan Marlowe from Department of Transportation regarding radio testing for their remote operators, possibly using Starlink on there, and how we can integrate Smart Connect. So we're just in the process of that. And then we're looking to have one of their vehicles up in the Fairbanks area as their lead for the agency to do some radio testing for us. The FEMA Region 10 REQUIC meeting was held the other day. So Tammy Gojo-Cockle and I attended that, and I gave the update for Alaska on what we're doing with ALMR and with FedRAMP. And very well attended meeting. There was approximately 116 other people in that meeting, and that includes Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. March 25th to the 27th, the Alaska 2025 statewide exercise is going to be held in Anchorage. This is a natural disaster exercise with agency representatives across the state, federal, local, municipal. Scott, Nick, and I attended last year. I'll be attending again. I'll be there to answer ALMR questions and any radio issues that people might have. So we're out there talking with other agencies, keeping the word out there for ALMR, promoting and educating people constantly. They're also sending out inventory lists. So we've talked about this last couple of meetings, Scott and I, that we're getting very close to the max radio licenses for FCC. So start looking at 33,000 licenses we're allowed to have, and those are subscribers on the system. I'll get into a little bit later, but right now our number is 32,652. So what we're doing, thank you to Nick's shop, we're going through looking at radios that haven't been on the system for at least 3 to 4 years. We're compiling those lists and we're sending out to different agencies to take a look. Are you still using those radios? Do you need them as a backup? So some agencies are keeping theirs in case there's a natural disaster, they can hand them out to other entities. But if you're not using them or they've already been replaced and you haven't filled out a subscriber request, we're asking people to go through their inventory, fill out the subscriber request, to have those removed. One agency went through and sent us a subscriber request to have 19 radios removed. 19 isn't a lot, but 19 here, 15 here, it adds up very quickly. So look for those emails from me on those radios that haven't been on the system for at least 4 years. I did attend the two-day information security for electronic utilities workshop that was hosted by the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Alaska Municipal League. It was Alaska-centric and mainly out for the villages on cybersecurity and electronics on there. So it was really good, very informational for me. Any questions on that before I go to the system upgrade? Hearing none, I'll move on. So the Motorola teams are working on the dispatch centers right now. They're installing the Juniper routers around the state. And of course, we've received FedRAMP approval, and we're working with security manager, Mr. Reed, making sure we're doing everything correctly, turning on the Smart Connect. We're doing the testing with both Wi-Fi and the LTE radio systems. So one of the tests we've used, it was very encouraging, very promising. We had a trooper in Bethel using their radio talking to dispatch in Fairbanks through their Wi-Fi and LTE. So that's never happened before. So we're excited about that. We had other folks using their radios off of their Wi-Fi system for their vehicles. And then Mr. Stormo and his team are looking and setting up some more testing. But very promising, very exciting, and where this will lead. But I want to stress, using your radios off LTE and Wi-Fi is just another tool in the toolbox. I want to make sure everyone understands this does not usurp ALMR. ALMR is still ALMR. There's a lot of places where you don't have Wi-Fi and you don't have LTE. Using the Smart Connect is just another tool in the toolbox for us. So we're continuing to work with agencies to turn on TDMA for their talk groups. We're working on that. Clear, they're working on the Aviat install tomorrow. I want to bring up here, I'm going to pull up. So Claire at the ALMR Help Desk puts out a daily update all the time. So I want to stress that anybody is not receiving this from her to contact the ALMR Help Desk and be put on there, because we got some phone calls from people who didn't have this. Some people in their shop did, other people didn't, and they weren't talking to each other, and we started getting phone calls from people asking why their radios weren't working at a certain area at a certain time. So this is a update that Claire puts out every day, talks about different outages and what's going on, what's completed. As you can see here, I highlighted the R1 North battery plant replacement, what kind of impact we're going to have. And it goes through the Juniper router upgrades, what could happen, any channels offline, any sites offline, and any open system issues. This is put out daily. So I want to encourage everyone to contact the ALMR Help Desk and get on Claire's email list if you're not already on there. And that's what I have for the system upgrade. For the document reviews, we have strategic and operational plans and a service level agreement were completed. Any questions before I go to the metrics? So as we start looking at the metrics for calls, we had 1,412,866. Monthly push-to-talks, 2,231,048. The monthly busies were 276. And the subscriber counts, like I said, we're at 32,652. And if we break that down, we have the municipal at 12,278, DOD 9,888, federal non-DOD 1,844, state of Alaska 8,630. So that's the breakdown for the subscriber counts. Sites below 3.9, we had 11 of them. As we start looking at through here, the storm damage, the microwave antenna system, the partial order for repair, the filler mount in the Woman's Bay. It took a while to get out there and get the teams out there flying out more parts if they needed. PMIs, which are just our scheduled maintenance. We had Esterdome, Goose Creek, and Pegger Road. And if you start looking at the others, Cooper Mountain, the antennas, the crews had to fly out there, work on the microwave dish, and the RX antenna was bent, so that's been fixed. Haynes had to change out the chargers. Axton, winter weather, the microwave backhaul had to be rerouted. Skagway was doing some maintenance, and the Yanner, that was a bounce caused by the Denali microwave. So that's where we're at for that one. Any questions on the metrics? Hearing none, I'll move on. So we start looking at the others. The International Wireless Communication Expo, that's going to be March 16th to the 21st. That'll be attended by myself and individuals from Mr. Stormo's shop. And what we do there, there's a lot of training sessions we go to there, And then we also talk with our vendors. So you start looking at lights, BDAs, shelters, microwaves. It's a good time to get one-on-one with the vendors out there. And then we also talk to the different radio manufacturers there. So a lot of networking and looking at different systems and equipment and the latest technology to make sure we're bringing the best here for the ALMR system. The Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection, they held their management spring operations meeting February 25th and 27th in Wasilla. And Northern Forestry Dispatch Center has individuals attending their inaugural National Basic Dispatch Academy. That's going on right now from February 25th to March 13th. And the reason I bring up the forestry folks, if everyone looks out the door and out their window, we do not have a lot of snow coverage right now. And until we get green up, our concern is wildland season, fire season is fast approaching. So until we get green up, a lot of fuel on the ground right now, and there's not a lot of snowpack. So what we do here in ALMR shop, the OMO and SMO, we monitor the daily maps for wildland fire to make sure it doesn't affect any of our towers. There were, last year, a couple of the wildland fires got close to the ALMR towers. And I work with their PIO, Beth Epson, up in Fairbanks to make sure that she's aware of where these fires are and according to our structures. And we also monitor the extra radio traffic around these towers when we do have these wildland fires. So I want to talk about that because without a lot of snowpack, that is a concern for us and obviously BLM and state wildland fire. The quarterly zone control rollovers were performed on February 25th and 26th. No issues or concerns from Nick or I or any of the dispatch centers that we talked to. Mary is working on the cost share numbers for the agencies, and once that's completed, we'll start sending out membership agreements. For anyone who needs to get a hold of me, I will be out of the office March 10th to the 14th. I'll be on PTO. I'll have my computer with me, but I'll be periodically checking it. So if you need anything while I'm out of the office, make sure to contact Nick and his team, the ALMR Help Desk, or Mary. Daylight savings time begins March 9th, just as a reminder for everyone. Also, if anybody pays attention to the Alaska Volcano Center. They've been watching and monitoring Mount Spur. I was here back in 92 when it dumped all the ash in Anchorage. So we just want to remind everyone that on the ALMR website, we do have catastrophic natural event contingency plan documents on there. And that document under sections 5.1, 5.5, and 6, they talk about what you can do or what we plan on doing in case there is a volcanic eruption or event that does target our towers. And Nick and his team do have contingency equipment, and so does the state. So we're monitoring that in case that happens. Also, there are several events that we've added to our calendar page at the ALMR website, so I encourage everyone to take a look at that. Also, the Exercise Vigilant Guard 2025 is ongoing. That is a four-day exercise for Alaska Guard, NORTHCOM, and JTF Alaska. It's based on flooding, earthquakes, and tsunami scenario. So that's all I have. Pending any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Fussy. It's quite a bit. Are there any other questions regarding that briefing? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to the Systems Management Office. Nick, do you have an update for us?
Thank you. It's really just kind of recapping a lot of the things that Paul said, so I'll kind of keep it much shorter. The Cooper Mountain, yes, it's fixed. I have talked to a couple users around that area, and they have definitely said that it is significantly better than it has been. The dispatch upgrade, Juniper upgrades are going pretty well. There's little bumps in here and there, but overall, it's progressing pretty well. So far, the results that I have seen and statistics that I've pulled from the switches and routers have been have been looking pretty good. I do want to add in that, you know, thank you for your patience for this upgrade. You know, I know it's rough to do the job of the dispatcher and have to deal with, you know, the people that are doing the actual upgrading or installing the equipment, you know, and working around them as well. So I do want to thank you for that and having the patience. With it becoming the spring and summer months, you know, PMIs are definitely going to be kicking up. So, you know, thank you again for your patience with that as well. So while we go out and do our preventative maintenance and ensuring that the RF sites out there are working at optimal performance. And that's all I've got to add.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Nick. The next item will be the state and DOD updates. Mr. Stromo, if you're on the line, do you have anything for us?
Just a couple of things to add. The power upgrade to our building 5900 where the master site is starting to progress again. We don't have any firm dates yet. It was when Chugach Electric is going to change out the transformer to our building. We do have the battery UPS system has been refreshed back in the master site, so that we know we've got good batteries to carry that for at least a few hours. And the plan is they were going to wire the generator to be able to power that essential equipment while they are swapping the transformer. So as much as possible, this is going to be planned to be a no outage situation, but playing with electricity is always a chance that something's going to not do what you were hoping it was going to do. So just there'll be plenty of notice, I guess, when that time, when we've got those dates and plenty of notice of what's happening when it's happening. So, but it's possible something outside of our control could go on. The cable cut that probably many are familiar with of ACS down in the southeast, luckily did not have an impact to ALMR. We were on a different cable at the time, but we did get dropped the southeast sites for about 18 minutes. So we're trying to find out how that happened. We think it had probably had something to do when they were trying to move services from one vendor over to another vendor that somehow they may have impacted our circuits. And we are also in the process of getting another vendor's circuit to the southeast. So we've got some extra redundancy by having separate vendors. So it'd be separate equipment. And we'd be able to keep as much of the southeast up and running. If something like that happened to the primary cable we were on, we would still have a secondary vendor with a different cable and different equipment. So always looking for ways to robust stuff up. There's probably no amount of money I couldn't spend trying to make this as reliable as possible. So, and then just back to Smart Connect for a second. I don't want to feel like I'm keeping anybody from doing this. What my cautious approach to it is, because we've already seen a few like hiccups that are involved with you, how you programmed it. The radios all have to be programmed to work on it. And because, as Paul mentioned earlier, there's potentially 8,000 state radios out there. And I would hate to go out and program 8,000 radios wrong and have to go find them again to reprogram them. So it's kind of the fact that I have that big challenge in front of me. But if you're a smaller agency who wants to start playing with this and you have an easier time making changes to your radios, if you find something didn't work like you wanted to, by all means, reach out to us. We can work to get you testing and trying that stuff out easier or faster with your smaller group. So I would be a little less risk averse if I, you know, could drive to every one of my radios and change them if I had to. But it would be a nightmare if I had to go try to change every trooper radio more than once. So are there any questions about any of those?
Hey, Scott. Kyle Green here. Question for you, if I could.
Yep.
Hey, so at what point do you maybe forecast that the user council will need to start thinking about or drafting policies related to ALMR access through through the Smart Connect system? Are we starting to see where guidance documents and other, I've been calling them guardrails, are needed to be implemented before we start opening it up further for other user agencies?
It's probably something we need to consider. There's a limitation, I think, of 200 simultaneous talk paths that can go through that. And I don't know how, I don't even know if we can have a way of measuring that to know how often that happens. Most likely there's not going to be a ton of traffic on it because anyone who is within the coverage footprint of ALMR is going to prefer and stay on land mobile radio. We probably should have, you can program it differently. And that's probably an example of something we would want to have a policy for that says you need to prefer LMR, not preferring broadband. Otherwise, they would be using Smart Connect the whole time, even when they were in LMR coverage. And that it is, Motorola won't, like they'll say it doesn't work on 3G. We're hearing conflicting information as to whether we've been able to Wi-Fi hotspot on a 3G cell site in Western Alaska or not. So those are just some of the things we're trying to prove out, because we've had some exciting technology in the past that when you get out there, the user experience isn't quite like you would expect. So we kind of want to test and make sure we know what that stuff is, and then try to find a way to publish and share that, perhaps through a document like you're mentioning, or just showing some use and test cases where things work. But this is definitely not as public safety grade and as reliable as land mobile radio is. There's a lot that can go wrong. But in places where you have no communication right now, I would say that any communication is better than nothing. You just need to realize that strange things could happen. Like, you could be trying to switch between Wi-Fi and LTE or something, depending on how your settings are. And that when that happens, you're probably dropping the calls, and things like that are going to happen. So, or if you're using a Wi-Fi bubble outside of a trooper vehicle, that bubble is only so big. And once you step outside of it, you're not going to be talking anymore. So,
yeah.
That might be easy for us to talk about, but it's hard to have thousands of people understanding it to that level of use case. So we definitely need some guidance and documentation put together as we figure this out.
Thanks, Scott. I absolutely agree with you. That's going to be the challenge to sort out and figure out, and then go along with that, making sure that the devices used to access ALMR through Smart Connect are appropriate and appropriately programmed. And as far as, to echo what Paul said earlier, Mr. Fussy said earlier, it's a tool in the toolbox. But as with every tool, they all have limitations. So that's why this is an augmentation to the system. In building use, particularly for DPS concerned buildings, here at the university, inside our buildings where we can't get signals in or out, but we have a robust Wi-Fi network or other type of backhaul, that's where defining those lines. Okay, this is where it's okay to use it, but make sure you switch back when you are in a ALMR covered area. I mean, we have to start somewhere with policy, I think. That way users know what guardrails there are with using this tool as much as in advance. To go along with identifying maybe we can allow these devices, but these other devices over here are showing that they are not reliable enough or proper enough to be on the ALMR system through Smart Connect. I hope that makes sense. So I'm not sure how to get the conversation going to maybe start that process or when we need to start that process, but I hope the user council has got it on its radar as something that we probably need to be discussing. So thank you.
Yeah, and just that example you just gave, since you are the university fire department, your radios would work when you went in those university buildings on that Wi-Fi network. But this is where it starts to get more complicated, because if some other fire department showed up to help, or if the troopers showed up for a reason and went in the buildings, their radios wouldn't be configured on that Wi-Fi. So it has certain use cases where it probably makes sense, but you know, the perfect solution to that is either more RF sites to push that coverage inside those buildings, or to have BDA systems to carry that signal in, so anyone that shows up with an ALMR radio can talk. So those are just the things that we just need to make sure people understand. So there's definitely some use cases for it that'll work great for the people that are in the building. You know, that's where they work all the time, but they just need to know if somebody else shows up, they're not going to be able to talk in that building without that radio being programmed for that building as well. And that's back to what I was talking about, is you have to touch each of those radios to program them. So if we get, you know, somebody saying, hey, I want to be able to go into the Walmart or whatever and the Starbucks and use their Wi-Fi, it's like, well, that's not really an option, because we'd have to program an SSID and a password for every one of those. So the LTE version of the radio will, I think, be much simpler. It's more expensive, obviously, but the Wi-Fi stuff may be good for people who are in an area often, and it's kind of their areas that they've got control of. So,
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
Sorry, Scott. I was going to say, if I could, Mr. Chair, add on to Scott's comment. Is the other thought process I would throw out there to think about for everybody is black cloud days versus gray cloud days versus maybe a sort of a cloudy sky day, as far as what incidents and uses that we're using this technology for, and coming up with the game plan for that. I mean, for your run of the mill where the buildings aren't at threat, where you're just a single agency, this might make sense. But where you have black cloud days where you have multiple agencies, this might not make sense. So those are like the guardrails, among other things, like we're talking about devices, what Wi-Fi network you can use, what security those Wi-Fi networks have to have, or whatever the backhaul is. I think those are some of the guardrails we should pay attention to explore. But thank you. I appreciate this conversation.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Scott, for all of that. Should we move on now to the DoD? Mr. Woodall?
Yeah, Scott, I have some questions for you that will help the DoD folks out. Do you have an update on the next upgrade timeframe? And also any update on review of the PWS for the contract?
We do not. Motorola has not given us a date for when we need to do the next upgrade off of, you know, past understandings of how that process worked. We would about now be into that process of needing to do an upgrade, but they haven't stated that we need to yet. So I would say we're probably good for a couple of years, is, you know. And we don't have anything in the 26 budget to do anything anyways, but I would think in 27, we're going to need to do an upgrade.
All right. Yeah. So can we have Motorola give us rough order of magnitude proposals so that we can get about the funding requirements, go after the funding that would be required? That's a minimum 2-year process for DoD. They prefer 5-year. But 2-year would be our minimum to be successful, and that's pushing it. But now's the time frame in which we need to highlight that and push it. And then the 26 contract, are you getting close to wanting to do a performance work statement review, pick up where we discuss the what's going in and or if anything's coming out from what the existing scope of work is?
Getting close, and I can talk more with you offline about that.
All right. And that's all I have.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Woodall. Are there any further questions regarding that? Okay, so let's hear from the council representatives. Department of Public Safety, is there anything from you today?
Not for me, Scott. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rockwell. Lieutenant?
I'll just add on some of that testing that we were doing with the Smart Connect. So the APX 6000 did successfully connect with, as you know, at Bethel, where there was LTE through GCI, or there's AT&T as well. But at Hooper Bay, it was 3G, GCI, and he was able to connect. But then at Nepasiak with the similar 3G GCI, no, it was a no-go. So, and then we were able to successfully connect mine to the Sierra Wireless on a vehicle and do a radio check, talk to dispatch. So that was pretty exciting to add that tool to the toolbox. But obviously, still more testing and going forward to figure out what will work in various places.
Oh, nice. Okay. Thanks, sir. How about DOT? Anything from them today? Is Mr. Glenn Denon on the line? No? Okay. Okay, we'll move on.
This is John. Actually, I think Henry was going to kick in there. He put his mic on, not mute.
Oh, I apologize. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello?
Can
you hear me now? Okay, I apologize there. I've been having a weird gremlin in my microphone for a couple weeks now, and it's inconsistent. In any case, as I believe Scott mentioned earlier, we are doing a kind of three location test of SmartLink or SmartConnect, one out of Anchorage, one out of Juneau, and then myself will be doing it out of Fairbanks, with kind of particular emphasis on areas up the Dalton, Elliott, and Steese highways, where we don't really have AMMR coverage. And also don't really have much in the way of 4G or 3G, for that matter, service. So I'm hoping probably not by our April meeting, but maybe May or June, I'll be able to give a kind of detailed status report back to the group on how well that's worked out. That's all I've got for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Anything else? Mr. Clendenin, do you have anything?
I do not, thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to all others. Mr. Edwards.
I have nothing to add for today, thank you.
All right, thanks. And that's on to me. So I do have a couple things. Tomorrow's our radio inventory day for state emergency management. And we'll be not just conducting the inventory, but also marking which radios are gonna come off the network. So we don't have a lot of radios, but we have enough that we can make a little dent in the issue with ALMR, you know, in capacity. Also had the head dispatcher from Fairbanks State Troopers down yesterday, showed her the new telex system that we had installed in the mobile command center, has four dispatch stations, accesses ALMR radios. There's a whole bank of them there. Those radios can be pulled and you can add your own, or you can just add your own code plug. It's an open source platform, brand new server that I just configured yesterday. A lot of brand new components to include a mast camera that also does infrared. So getting that ready to go. Wildland fire season is kicking in a little early, so I'm hoping to have that ready to roll by the end of March. And that's it for us. So I guess I better move on. moving on to the DoD component. Do we have anything from J-Bear? Okay, nothing. How about Eielson?
Yeah, this is Nathan Adams filling in for Sergeant Rodriguez. He asked me to brief that we had received 1,200 of our flash codes for the TDMA upgrades, and we've implemented about 25 of them this week, and we have the Med Group Squadron scheduled to bring in as many of the radios as we can on Monday and do a one-day turnaround on them and get them back to them and take the rest of the radios and then complete them and continue to schedule other squadrons weekly as they can bring them in. And we also had BK Technology in-house yesterday showing us their product, and everyone that was there was very pleased with what they saw. And that'll be all.
This is Mr. Woodall. When you guys put your APXs on and you got rid of your XTXs, did you take them off the system?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, sir. How about anything from the Army? Okay. How about the non-DOD federal component?
Nothing from the FBI.
Thank you, sir. Department of Justice?
No.
How about Department of Interior?
We're still working on distributing our new BKR 5000 TDMA compatible radios. So we've been phasing those in and getting rid of the old KNGs. And then we're also in the process of pushing a PR for the TDMA upgrades on our Motorolas. So should hopefully have all of our radios except for the mobiles on TDMA by the end of the year, and planning to do the mobiles next fiscal year.
Oh, great. Thank you for that. Moving on to all others.
Nothing. Yeah, good morning, sir. Or afternoon, I should say. nothing from TSA Alaska. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Moving on to the municipal component. Anything from municipalities north?
Nothing to add at this point. Thank you.
How about southeast?
This is Erin from Juneau, and the only update I really have is in Juneau, we are working on an RFP to purchase more subscribers to have more of our public safety radio users and partners in Juneau on the system.
Oh, nice. Thank you. And Municipality Central.
Hello, this is Tammy and Soldatna for Municipality Central. I don't have any updates for today. I do have a few projects that are in the very beginning stages and hope to have an update next meeting.
Great, great. Thank you. Mr. Goodman, are you on the line?
I am. We are going forward here in Palmer with TDMA and adding more of our Kenwoods to the system. We've been doing some coverage testing, and I've been working with Mr. Stormo and Mr. Fussy on those. Other than that, no updates.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Goodman. Moving on to, if there aren't any more questions, we can move on to new business.
If I could?
Yes, sir.
Bruce Richter from DHS CISA. I want to share an announcement that the state 911 coordinator Don Lane pushed out. You can make the first week of April an exciting Wednesday, Thursday, Friday comms focused kind of event. Obviously, April 2nd is the next user council meeting, and then on the Thursday and the Friday, April 3rd and 4th, both over in person at the state crime lab training room in the morning, and also a virtual event that people can register for. we're working with CISA headquarters and bringing a two-day workshop up here called Cyber Resist at 911. It does require that advanced registration, and the links in the announcement that Lane sent out, I can forward that for sharing. He says the intended audience for this workshop is employees in state and local government to support 911, IT, cyber, public safety, and law enforcement. I would strongly encourage each of you to forward this to, at the very least, IT personnel, provide direct support to your 911 center. And there's information on the link for the registration. But we've been doing these workshops in other states around the nation and sharing some lessons learned and sharing some information that I think will be helpful. The second item I wanted to share, since the last ALMR meeting, both the FCC and DHS Science and Technology collaborated on an updated kind of a jamming alert poster. And I just forwarded the link to you, and I'd ask that go out in a minute. It's a pretty good poster because not only does it show photographs of examples of some of the things that have been seized around the country that are being used to defeat law enforcement communications. As an example, you may have read some of the stories about NFL players or NBA stars having their houses burglarized while they're at the game. Well, it's been a South American series of gangs doing that, and they're bringing these jammers along with them while they're doing the burglaries. And so it's kind of nice to know what the bad guys are using and see some recent examples. The poster also has some good examples of what law enforcement can do to defeat that jamming if they think they're being jammed. So I'd encourage you to take a look at it. It's a fairly good product. You can post it on the briefing room bulletin board if anybody still uses bulletin boards. And I actually have two questions for the group. The first one is, we're working on trying to do a undersea cable threat awareness briefing for the different cable providers, and I don't have a good contact at Quintillion. I've not been able to get a good response out of Quintillion. If anybody's got a good contact or an email or a phone number of somebody at Quintillion, I would appreciate that. And my second is, we were talking about the options for resilience and redundancy, and certainly Starlink's been a useful one, and I know ACS also is a reseller of OneWeb, and they use that for some of the communities that might be cut off from other service. But as I was walking into the meeting, there's a very clean-looking state of Alaska statewide aviation services rig out there with what looks like a Starlink antenna on the roof. And I'm curious if the orientation of that antenna when the vehicle is pointed in a different direction or in different terrain makes any difference to how well that tool works. Does anybody
have any clue? No, we have Starshield, not Starlink, but he has a mobile version. Basically, you just need it oriented up in the sky. And as you're moving it, it navigates satellite to satellite. The Marine Corps took our Starshield and we're on trains up in Fairbanks and went a pretty good distance on the Alaska Railroad way up north and did not have any issues whatsoever. So we're not seeing any problems if you have the mobile coverage. So.
Good to know.
We've had the same.
This is Henry Cole with DOT. I can comment briefly on both of those questions. The first about a contact with Quintillion. I don't personally have one, but our utilities section has issued permits to them. So I'll send a reach out over there and find out what the best starting point would be. And then second, regarding the Starlink panels, from what I understand, we have several of them on vehicles now. For the most part, orientation doesn't really matter. A couple of the older mounts had the panel at maybe a 30-degree angle. That one turns out works best when the vehicle is facing north. The newer mounts are more flat, doesn't seem to matter. So that's what's been reported to me.
That's true. Yeah. Flat is the best.
And this is Scott. That vehicle is actually out there for testing with Smart Connect. We we have been able to connect it through the Starlink. And so there, those use cases like the Dalton Highway, I got the email from Eli that I think I would expect this is going to work fairly well in that scenario. They did. Ryan Marlowe, the guy that loaned us that vehicle, said there are a couple of different panels you can have on the roof, and one of them is a little more particular how you line it up, but the others seem to work pretty much all the time. So I think as long as you get the right stuff on for that Starlink panel on a vehicle, it seems like their experience has been it works pretty well.
Great to have those options. Thanks for that update.
One other update. I don't know if you're tracking, but OneWeb failed to program Leap Year into their satellites. I don't know. Right now, they're not thinking that that what they have launched is going to be viable after Leap Year. So just a heads up on that.
Just back to the Starlink on vehicles. So we have one on one of our Tahoes. Captain Brent Johnson has it on his, but he also has the FirstNet transceiver connected to the Starlink. And so he's been able to verify that those are working well together. And he's got good FirstNet coverage in areas where there ordinarily isn't from that FirstNet device mounted in his vehicle.
Wow.
Connected to the Starlink.
Thanks for
that. Well, OneWeb.
Yeah.
A little late to fix that one. Right. All right, if there's nothing else, then we can move on to new business. Huh? Oh, that was new business. Yeah. Wow, I'm batting 100. Thanks. Well, the next meetings are going to be April 2nd and May 7th. Does anybody have anything else at this time? Okay, hearing nothing, I'll entertain a motion and a second for to adjourn the meeting.
Somebody wants to leave. Hurry up.
This is Henry Cole. I'll move to adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. And a second?
Keith Varian.
Thank you, Mr. Varian. The meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good to receive.